The Low Post is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Don't forget to check out the SVP pod with the one and only Scott Van Pelt. On the latest episode, SVP talked to ESPN NBA analyst Tim Legler about the art of the touchscreen. Wow, that's cool. You can find the SVP pod wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast live on a Monday afternoon where for the third straight day, the sun is shining, birds are chirping, it's beautiful outside. And we're only 9 days away from the NBA draft, and to help us preview it, two of the very best in the world at what they do, and think about how rarely you could say that about someone, the best in the world at what they do, are draft experts Jonathan Givony and Mike Schmitz. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, great, man. Thanks for having us.
I always ask. I think it's the polite thing to do. Thank you for coming on and giving me a little time. I know you guys are busy, but are you less busy? Are you more busy? Givony, you go first. Is the pandemic, how has the pandemic changed the lead up to the draft for you, if at all? Obviously it's changed the lead up for teams. They have less information. They've had less access to players, but from your information gathering perspective, is it any different?
It started to heat up now. It was just weird that for months on end, I felt like, and a lot of NBA teams that I talked to felt the same way. They just didn't want to talk about the draft. They're like, it's too far away. We can't think about this right now. This is the class that we've been studying for 2+ years now. And I dug up a link to a piece you wrote about James Wiseman in the summer of 2018, where we're like, is he the number one pick? Is he not? To still not be able to put this one in the rear view and kind of turn the page. That's what I think has been the challenging part, is that this isn't that kind of class where it's just so exciting to keep talking about them again and again and again for 2+ years.
Yeah. People are within the league are getting tired of this draft class. They're ready to move on. They're definitely ready to make some trades. There's some itchy trade trigger figures. I don't know when the moratorium is going to be lifted, but people expect there will be a lifting of the moratorium some amount of days before the draft, and get ready because stuff is going to start flying. It's going to be fun. Let's start with what you wrote today, Givony. The latest buzz going into the draft again, 9 days out. And I thought right off the top, it was very interesting. You reported that the assumption among a lot of teams is that LaMelo Ball is going to be the number one pick in the draft, and that several teams, whether it's by Minnesota or someone that trades for that pick, and that several teams have tried to trade for that pick or have looked into trading for that pick, including Chicago, Oklahoma City, which is a name that caught me off guard, and we can talk about that later, and Detroit. So there's been an interesting thing where all of the draft Knicks that I really respect and go to try to learn who the hell these guys are before the draft love LaMelo Ball. Love, love, love. You guys both love LaMelo Ball. You have him both. Jonathan, you reported today that your assumption at this point is that he will likely be the number one pick in the draft. And then I feel like every other day there's this other narrative is LaMelo going to slip? How far is he going to slip? Could he slip all the way to 7? Could he slip all the way to 8? Could he slip to 5? So Givony, I'll start with you. What's going on with LaMelo? What leads you to – how strongly do you actually believe that the number one pick is coalescing around him?
I think what's happening is that the teams outside the top 10, they look at these top three guys, LaMelo, Anthony Edwards, James Wiseman, and they're just scared shitless. They're just we want no part in those guys, and we would be petrified to make that pick. And I think that's where some of the chatter, among the part-time draft people is coming, but if you talk to the teams in the top 10, or at least most of them, they are very excited about LaMelo. And I'm hearing some of the offers that are being made to Minnesota, and they're pretty good, relative to what you would think is a bad number one pick, and it doesn't sound like they're going to make that move. So far they're rebuffing these offers, and so there's going to be a second meeting here between LaMelo and Minnesota at some point in the near future. I expect he's going to have to get on the basketball court and show them some stuff, but it's possible that will be enough to lock up the number one pick, where they might just say, we're not trading the pick and we're committing to him, you know? So we'll see kind of how that goes, but that's what I'm following. But it really doesn't jive with what out the other, you know, media outlets that I'm reading, where it's like, he's in some kind of free fall, he's having these horrible workouts, he's having terrible interviews. I mean, that just isn't true, because he hasn't worked out for anybody, you know, and he's done like maybe four interviews so far, and he's not a great interview, but I don't, you know, I mean, so I don't know where that's coming from, but I suspect that part of it is he's such a lightning rod, and any time you tweet about him, you write about him, you mention him on a podcast, it gets so much attention. You know, the internet.
Oh, good, good. This is my first time doing it.
Yeah, and so that to me is what it is. It's like, let's take the opposite stance. LaMelo stinks, you know, and LaMelo is free falling. That's how you get attention, you know, in 2020. And that I think is where it's coming from.
So Schmitz, Minnesota is a very unusual team to be picking number one in a couple of senses. They're bad, which is not unusual, but for a bad team, it is unusual that they have two not quite mid-career veterans, but not far away from that, that they view as ensconced at two positions in D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns. So they, in theory, could be more concerned about fit than most bad teams picking number one in the draft. They also owe their 2021 pick to the Warriors with top four protection, so they have some incentive to try to be decent. Unless the season spirals out of control, in which case they have some incentive to be like as bad as possible. So they're unusual in that regard. You both have written a lot about LaMelo. Mike, obviously the concerns that I mean, I've watched enough film to like know that he's a genius passer. Like all that is he's very tall for a lead ball handler, and he has it. Whatever it is, he's got it as a passer. The jump shot, and I hear like as many concerns about his defense as I do about his jump shot from front office people who are looking at him in the draft. So Mike, like jump shot defense, like what kind of fit would he be in Minnesota if they were to take him?
I think it would take some time for them to figure it out with him and D'Angelo, both guys who need the ball in their hands more or less to be effective. But I think they can make it work. Like we've seen, this is a multi-ball handler league, right? You want guys who can pass, dribble, shoot. And I think that they would eventually figure that out. I mean, with those three guys, that's one of the most skilled under 25 kind of big threes that you would really have, you know, in the NBA. Now, I think the bigger question is defensively, what would that look like, right? And what's going to save LaMelo there, I think, is that he's 6'7", and he's an incredible rebounder.
He doesn't look like he would be a bad defender. Like when I started hearing front offices like tell me how bad he was defensively, I'm like, well, that, I mean, he's big. Like he's big for a guard. So tell me more about how you can see that projecting.
Yeah, like they're not going to take advantage of him like they would a Trae Young, I don't think. You know, they're not going to put him in ball screens, get a switch, and then just attack him left and right. Like he at least has the size to hold up there. But he's just never played in a winning environment. That's the reality of the situation. And I think that's the biggest question for me. It's not about the shooting, because he's incredibly confident. He has great touch. It's not about can he survive defensively, because he's 6'7" and he's a genius rebounder and really smart off the ball when he wants to be. It's more about if he goes to a situation where things are going south and they're losing, and he's got to kind of be one of the guys to turn things around. Like, is he going to do that? And it's not really completely his fault, right? Like, he didn't decide to leave high school and go to Lithuania. He didn't decide, you know, to go to all these different stops. And that ultimately led to Australia. But I think that's what teams are grappling with, is like, is this kid ever going to be a winner? Is he ever going to like right the ship when things are going poorly? And because he's just been at so many different places, he's never really finished a full season. But the reality is he makes everyone around him better. People like playing with him. And I agree with Jonathan. Like there's so much negativity about him that people want to just spout off that he sucks. And I think people initially were like, hey, are you guys doing this for clicks? Are you guys just like ranking him high so that you get clicks? And it's like, no, this dude's actually a 6'7" point guard who's a genius with the basketball and has that it factor that you talked about. So I think he would fit with those guys just fine. Defensively, I think he's going to figure it out. The question I have is if he goes to like a Charlotte or somewhere like that, where you're having a down season and you really got to like dig deep, How much does he want to put up with those dog days?
What's his ceiling as a jump shooter? Like, what could we be talking about in terms of, like, will he ever be able to shoot pull-up threes at a decent clip? Is the goal to be more like, can you have a Tony Parker level trajectory where you just become reliable enough from, well, I mean, Tony Parker was more than reliable. He became elite, but really good from 20 feet. Like, what's your jump shot projection?
I think he's going to be good. I mean, his problem is shot selection more than anything. Like, he likes the Trae Young 30-foot pull-ups. I've honestly compared him a little bit to Trae in some ways, just as like a 6'7" Trae who's not quite as accurate of a shooter, but is much bigger, right? So if you kind of exchange in those two areas, that's the kind of player you get, and somebody that you got to live with the bad to get to the good. You got to live with some of the crazy plays to get to the genius. So he's not going to be like a Ricky Rubio where you're going under, and you're daring him. And I don't think it's going to be Lonzo either, because Lonzo always struggled from the free throw line. Lonzo always had some confidence issues. LaMelo has zero confidence issues, zero. So I think he's always going to be streaky because he's really, really just lax with his mechanics. He's a very undisciplined, kind of aloof type of dude. So I could see him being around a league average type of shooter, to where he's going to take some crazy pull-up threes and he's going to make some crazy pull-up threes. He might have 0 for 7 games and he might have 6 for 8 games. That's kind of how I view him.
Jonathan, let's go back to the conversation about trading the number one pick, because there are a couple interesting games of chicken going on with, again, really unusual, if not unprecedented, to have the two top teams in the draft thinking about trading down. It never happens. So you have game of chicken number one is like Minnesota. I don't know. I mean, they've been pretty close to the vest with what they like and who they prefer and all that. But they can get a lot of stuff. They can get some stuff for trading down. But then it's like, how far? Let's say we go down to 3. How much do we care who Golden State takes it to? Like, if they have a strong preference between whoever and whoever, they have to put some value on, like, man, if we drop to 3, we might not get anybody we really love so much. So that's game of chicken number one. Game of chicken number two is all these teams that are maybe thinking about engaging Golden State in trade discussions for the number two pick. They have to sit there like, well, who's Minnesota taking at 1? Like, how much do we actually, what chances do we actually have of getting the guy we're targeting? Maybe these are trades that happen like on the clock, right? But let's go back to your report on the number one pick. Chicago is the first name that you wrote, and it jumped out to me because you talk to teams around the league. Maybe it's because they have a new front office. Maybe it's because Arturis plays things pretty tight. But I've heard a lot of people asking me, hey, what do you think Chicago is going to do? Or like, if you heard anything about what Chicago is going to do, they have the rest of the league kind of confused. Have you heard any of that in your sort of sniffing around? Hey, are they maybe trying to move up?
Yeah, you keep hearing from teams that the draft starts at 4 because there's an assumption that LaMelo, Edwards, and Wiseman are going 1, 2, 3 in some order. But what are they going to do at 4? You know, do they take Denny Avdia? Do they go with Tyrese Halliburton, Obi Toppin? You know, there's a lot of conjecture about that. They've done a really good job of kind of keeping their options open. Even the agents of the players at the top, they have no idea. You know, usually by now, the agents have a pretty good idea where their guys are, where they stand with each team. Nobody really knows where they stand with Chicago. I do think that there's a possibility that they do look to move up to 1. I've heard that they're fans of LaMelo. You know, they do have some really good pieces in place. You know, I mean, you hear that. I'm hearing that they like Lauri Markkanen a lot more right now than Wendell Carter, that he's more of an untouchable. And so, you know, Wendell has been a little bit disappointing so far his first 2 years. I think it's way too early to give up on him. I think he's going to be a stud when it's all said and done. I think he's at least a starter in the NBA, if not a really good starter. But is that what it takes for them to move up from 4 to 1? It seems like a pretty hefty price to me, but that is what it's going to cost, it looks like.
In a typical draft, not typical, but in, let's say, the 50% of drafts or 40% of drafts where there's a no-brainer number one pick, that is not an exorbitant price at all. There's like an exponential gap in value from number one to everything else. By all accounts, this is not that kind of draft unless
But it might be, because all the people that I respect the most, they say LaMelo Ball is a no-brainer number one pick. He's the most talented player in the draft. We just did our article about the best guards in the draft. Schmidt, me, and Pelton.
Unanimous.
You know, so maybe we're overthinking this to an extent. Maybe this is that kind of draft where LaMelo is the big prize, and that's what everybody's angling for. That's what we might find out on draft night, ultimately.
My best – okay, so you've hit on the question, which is like, how is Chicago getting up to number one? If they're trying to get up to number one, how are they doing it? You know, this is the time of year – part of the confusion I think that happens is Chicago, like every team, is probably making calls in every single direction. Who should we draft if we sit at four? How can we move up? How can we move down? So, like, depending on who you hear from on a particular day, they'll have heard from Chicago doing a different thing than another guy who you may not hear from on a particular day who heard from Chicago trying to do the opposite thing. I don't know what the Bulls are going to do. As of 10 days ago to 12 days ago, my best educated guess, and that's really all, I mean, this is the time of year where you really got to, you got to really lean on the people you trust, right? My best educated guess was they seemed pretty cool to me based on what other teams were telling me, sitting at four and just taking who's ever falling to them. I do think there is some degree of, we are a new front office. We have a new coach. To your point, Wendell Carter Jr. had a very strange and disappointing second season under Jim Boylan. We kind of want to make sure we know what we have in these guys before we trade one of them. But again, that's just my best educated guess. And we can start the discussion of like, what does it take to move from four to one? Is Carter good enough? I don't think Minnesota is excited to revisit the Zach LaVine experience, if that's what it takes. I mean, I guess we're zeroing in on Carter. Is that right, Jonathan?
Doesn't sound like Lowry is on the table, you know? And so, and then the question becomes, how much can you play Cat and Carter together? I mean, I think they can play 10 to 15 minutes per game together. And then Wendell takes the backup center minutes and, you know, and it works out. There's 96 minutes there to go around. So it's not a problem. But yeah, that's what it sounds like. You know, I mean, they could always look at future picks too. I mean, that's an interesting thing is that nobody really wants to put a 2021 first rounder on the table right now because it is such a stacked draft. I mean, There are seven or eight guys who really are in the mix for the top three. You know, I mean, it's a loaded, loaded draft. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's talked about, you know, Cade Cunningham and Jalen Green and to a lesser extent, Evan Mobley. But I mean, I think BJ Boston is right there. I think Keon Johnson is right there. I think Jalen Johnson is right there. It's a really, really top heavy draft. And, you know, it's going to be a really weird season in college. So we'll see how those guys get scouted, how many people are going to be able to get actual eyes on them physically in person. But, those 2021 picks, it's going to take a lot, I think.
You talk to people who have engaged with the Warriors on any kind of level. I mean, just because people need to understand is just because Team X calls Team Y doesn't necessarily mean they're interested in trading with that team. They just start sniffing around for intel. They have friends on that team. So when I say when you talk to teams who have talked to the Warriors about the number two pick, it doesn't even necessarily mean they're trying to trade for that pick. It's just they're having conversations just as you would. The Warriors seem to those teams to value that Minnesota pick more highly than they value the number two pick in this draft, which has been, and Schmitz, it sounds like you're nodding a lot. It sounds like you agree. And, you know, the next class is loaded. 2022 might be the super draft, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think Cade Cunningham would go number one in this draft potentially. You know, I think Jalen Green would have a chance to do that. Zaire Williams, all the names that Jonathan said, like, I mean, these guys are complete studs. And then as you continue going down the line, I mean, the drafts ahead of us are all going to be better than this one, we think, at this point. So, yeah, I would hang on to those 21 picks for sure, especially with Cunningham coming down the line. He's the one, I think, where people feel really, really comfortable. Like, this dude is going to be an all-star early on in his career, like 6'7", 6'8". Great body, close to a 7 foot wingspan. Like, he can play 1 through 3, even 1 through 4. I mean, he is like the epitome of the modern NBA. You know, going to be playing for Oklahoma State this year. So I think everyone should hold on nice and tight to those 2021s.
So, you know, speaking of Minnesota and like, what if they trade down and this and that, you know, part of that equation is, again, how much do they really like someone that they need to be at number 2 or number 3 or wherever to, or number 1 rather, to get? Like, how much do they really like somebody to stay? And that makes me want to ask you, Schmitz, first about Anthony Edwards, because boy, does that dude look the part. Like, and Givone, you had a detail in your piece today about the people at P3, which is the workout place in Santa Barbara and also the place that tests all the athletes that come through the draft combine in normal years. He exerts more force in leaping and jumping drills than any player ever at his position. So
that was Schmitz's nugget, I think.
Huh? Oh, that was okay. Schmitz, congratulations. That's your nugget. I loved it. No, you should take it. It was a great nugget. I had to pause reading that and like made sure I read the sentence correctly. He was also my favorite participant in your film sessions. He was such a good sport about everything. He was really, really funny. And then you talk to people around the league and they're like, oh yeah, Zach, he's just like Dion Waiters with like, he can jump a little higher. I'm like, Dion Waiters? He's like, so tell me, and he's not number one on either of your boards. So Schmitz, give me your level of like, how far is the drop from LaMelo to him in your view? Like, how excited would Minnesota fans, should Minnesota fans be if he's the one they end up with? Like, what's your take? Because this is like, that's really, really polarizing when you hear something like that.
Yeah, I think this is where Jonathan and I probably differ the most, at least toward the top. Like, I like him. I mean, he is an insane, insane talent. And maybe it's because I was at that Maui game against Michigan State when he had 37 points. And like, you just don't see regular dudes do that against one of the best teams in the country. Like, it was 30-foot step back. He was rotating for blocks. He was throwing like two-handed bounce passes through traffic and transition. And that's not even a strength of his. So like, his talent, his like ability to score the ball at that size, like 6'5", 230 pounds, is one of the most impressive I've ever seen. So, you know, I think the Waiters thing is definitely shortchanging him. I've always thought like, okay, Wiggins, I can see a little bit more in terms of like, he's a crazy talent who you don't always get as much out of him as you would hope, right? Like Wiggins, we know sometimes we're like, man, just like give us a little bit more, give us a little bit more. And that's kind of been his career. But even with that said, like, this dude still averaged 19 points a game in a major conference, had some monster games, and is as shifty as I've seen at 230 pounds. So those P3 numbers I thought were really, really impressive. You never want to put too much value in that, obviously, but they were like giddy showing me some of that stuff.
It's not a bad thing. You should put some value in it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it wasn't just the force too. It was like his ability to stop and start was very like Harden-esque, just with like slamming on the brakes and then the ability to accelerate like crazy. Like, so obviously Harden was super, super accomplished. He was very efficient. He's a much better passer, like obviously, but just in terms of a guy who has that strength and that shift and can go get a bucket against anybody, that's what Edwards has. So he's a turn it off, turn it on type of guy, like that. You saw it in the film session. That's Anthony Edwards at his best. Like, that's when he's vivacious and he's charismatic and he's like really, really feeling good. And then some days you'll interview him and you get the complete opposite. Or some days you go to a practice and it's like, man, is Ant-Man going to wake up? And I think that's what they battled throughout the season. But you know, he's never really played in a program where winning was super valued until this year at Georgia. You know, he reclassified late in his career. You know, so he hasn't, he's like a ball of clay. And I think it's really, really going to depend on where he lands. He's totally opposite from LaMelo. Like, LaMelo is going to have some issues scoring in the half court efficiently. He's not explosive. He's not physical. And this kid is all those things. Like, he can score with the best of them. He can go get a bucket against any defender. And he's really, really forceful to the rim at that size. So I'm a fan. Now it's up to the NBA teams. Like, it's their job to identify the talent and figure out a way to get through to this kid and make him consistent on a day-to-day basis. But yeah, I really appreciate the talent.
Gavoni, would you like to deliver the counterargument, or do you feel like you have sufficiently done so in writing and other media so far?
I'm happy to say it as many times as I can. I mean, I think this kid is an incredible talent. And there's no question in my mind that he is the prototype of what the NBA is looking for right now at the two-guard position. You know, just the issue is the lack of fundamentals, the lack of, you know, accountability that he's been held to up until November of 2019, the lack of motor. You know, I just think he's a selective competitor, and that's a very hard thing to teach a guy, you know, how to compete on a day-to-day basis. And I get all the talk about why he's like that, because his background was very difficult. He was bought and sold, you know, I mean, for most of his career, every decision that was made for him was made under the guise of how do we keep this guy close and make sure we don't lose him. It wasn't what's best for this kid's development. It's like, let's turn down USA Basketball invites. Let's not send him to Montverde Academy or IMG or a place where he's going to get pushed every day in practice. And so it was not, let's put him in the Nike UIBL where he's either going to sink or swim. And so it's going to be hard to make up for all that time that he's missed. And the fact that, you know, he spent the last 8 months obviously not getting into great shape. We saw in the pro day, to me, he was huffing and puffing after 30 seconds. He was moving at half speed. That did nothing to, you know, kind of ease my mind about those concerns about, I just don't trust this guy. You know, I mean, I get that he's a talent, but I've been doing this for 17 years and I've seen a lot of talents in my time. And usually players like this don't end up reaching their full potential. Sometimes they do, but if I were the one, you know, with the pick in my hands at number two, it wouldn't be him. It wouldn't be Wiseman, by the way, either.
I was going to say, this sounds a lot like the mutual skepticism relative skepticism, I think you guys share about Wiseman. And Schmitz, I had to chuckle. I almost started playing a sober drinking game because it was in the middle of the day on your film session with Wiseman about how many times you mentioned not having a mean streak or not having there. I was like, man, if I actually did this for real, my day would be over. But Schmitz, you said the word James Harden. And that we're going to get sidetracked for a second, and I don't care because that brought up a little a light bulb atop my head. I wanted to ask you guys to elaborate a little bit more on Killian Hayes, because there's a lot of guys in this draft who seem to have like a super wide range of possibilities where they could go in the draft and a super wide range of what draft evaluators think of them. So my friend Kevin O'Connor at The Ringer has Killian Hayes ranked as the single best prospect in the draft. A couple other guys have him in the top four or top five. I think you guys had him outside the top five guards, period, in the draft, in your top guards. Maybe you had him at number six. Pelton had him at number five. I watched some tape on him. I certainly get the intrigue. I get the Harden, you know, the sort of visual Harden comparison, not a real Harden comparison, but the visual. So either one of you, well, Schmitz, I'll start with you. Like, where are we at with him? And like, why is there so much differentiation in what he is going to be?
Yeah, I like his long-term potential. I think it's going to take him time because he's somebody who needs a situation set up for him to have success, right? And I think oftentimes when we're evaluating international prospects, it's really important to look at the context of the situation, right? We can all pop on Synergy and throw on the last 100 possessions and say what we think of a guy, right? But I think it's really important to know that it's very different going to put up numbers on an losing team than maybe it would be to play 15 minutes for Maccabi Tel Aviv and put up very little stats, right? It's just, it's a different situation. So I just think that it's going to take Killian time to, once he gets to the NBA, learn how to play with other good players, because he's not a guy who made a lot of shots off the catch. You know, a lot of his success came in spread ball screen. We're going to live through your mistakes, and we're going to allow you to just kind of do what you do and pick and roll. And so that was the benefit for him of going to a place like where the coach basically said, it's about you, Killian. This year is about you. We're going to make sure that you get drafted high. We're going to make sure that you're able to show your talent. And we're going to live with some of the losses. We're going to live with some of the turnovers. And I think ultimately that's going to help Killian for sure, right? It allowed him to, you know, live through some of those mistakes and be able to develop his game. But in the NBA, teams aren't as patient, right? Like teams aren't as patient to just say, hey, Killian, here's the ball. If you turn the ball over 25% of your pick and roll possessions, we'll live with that. It's like, no, wait a minute. We have James Harden over here. We have Russell Westbrook. We have guys who are also really, really good with the ball. So I think that's where Jonathan and I probably differ a little bit more than some of the others, is that I just think it's going to take Killian time to learn how to play with other good players. I mean, he shot only 29% from three this year. He's a career 27% three-point shooter on his career, and he's not really a jet with the ball either, right? So one of those things is going to have to change. I think he's going to have to become a better perimeter shooter off the bounce, and then he can use his size and IQ to pick people apart, because going to his left hand and pick and roll, he's incredible. He's a tremendous passer, and he's really, really young. He's got great size. So there's a lot to like about him. I just kind of felt like it was a little bit quick to say that, you know, he's in the same category as a lot of those other guys that we talked about.
Now, Jonathan, I know later in this week, I think Wednesday, you have another mock draft coming out, or your updated mock draft. Have you done one since the lottery? I think the lottery was the last one, right?
I've been updating it internally, like, you know, every day, but
publicly.
Wednesday will be the first one that comes out.
Can you spoil where you have Hayes, or ballpark where you have Hayes, or do you not? Just him. I won't ask you to spoil anyone else, but maybe you don't want to.
I don't care. Yeah, he's at number 12 on the updated mock to Sacramento.
Interesting.
He honestly, Zach, talking to teams even behind Sacramento at 12, people have no idea where he's going. You know, you hear stuff from some of these teams that are in the late lottery, the mid first, the late teen. They say it's hard to find any one team who is absolutely in love with Killian Hayes. His range is huge. Now, apparently, two of the teams that really like him the most, I don't know if he's at the top of their board, but Chicago at 4, Detroit at 7. You do hear some chatter there that he's in the mix among 4 or 5 other guys. I don't know if he's going to get there. Maybe if there are scenarios where these teams trade down, maybe then he's the guy. But, you know, I wouldn't shock me if on draft night he fell out of the lottery altogether. You know, even though I think he should be somewhere in that 10 to 15 mix. But I'm having a really hard time finding an actual home for him, just because, you know, the problem with Killian, where I think comparing him with other guys, is that he, you know, we've been scouting him for so long. And I think the first time we saw him was in 2017, April. It was at the Jordan Brand International game.
And he's literally probably 15 at that time or something like that, right?
So that was 3 years ago. So yeah, he was 15 years old, exactly. And then we saw him at the FIBA Under 16 European Championship, where he was MVP. We saw him at the EuroCamp that spring also. We saw him at the Under 17 World Cup. We saw him at two different BWBs and one NBA global camp in Treviso. So we've seen him in other settings that aren't Ulm. And that's where I think NBA teams are struggling. They say, well, if you take him outside of this one situation where everything was catered to him, everything was about him getting numbers, him getting drafted high, because they want to attract other talents in future years. They just spent 20 million euro on this incredible practice facility and academy. And that's their goal, is every next Killian Hayes in Europe should go through Ulm. And so he was kind of, you know, the test case for people to look at. And so when he had 8 turnovers in his first game in September, they let him play through it. You know, that would never, there's no other player in the draft other than maybe LaMelo who you could say that about. And so that's where a lot of the skepticism around Hayes comes, because I think the German league is a little bit overrated. It's a pretty unathletic league. And he could get away with things at that level that are going to be a lot more difficult for him in the NBA, in my opinion.
Well, when you mention other teams at Chicago at 4, Detroit at 7, potentially taking their chances to trade down and see if I can still get Killian Hayes, but I might be able to get something else too for trading down. You know, you run the risk of, this seems particularly chaotic in terms of trying to figure out who everyone between you and the trade down spot is going to pick, because there's so many guys with wide ranges. And then you start to make these deals contingent on certain players being available. And that gets really tricky in real time and can end up getting a little bit messed up. So you just don't know. Like, for instance, I'll just throw some names at you. I, for someone who does not know the draft, the prospects like at all until a day before, which doesn't really even count, everyone and their brother in the last 72 hours has asked me about Patrick Williams. They're not asking me for my opinion on Patrick Williams because they don't know. I don't know. They're asking me, what am I hearing about who might take Patrick Williams? So, and Givony, he was in your column today as a surefire top 9 pick, I think, or top 10 pick, whatever it was. So I watched a little film on him. I get it. So I guess I'll start with you, Jonathan. Like, what has happened? Why am I suddenly getting blown up about this guy? What has happened in the last 2 weeks to sort of make him? And I've had people, by the way, above 9, 8 ask me about Patrick Williams. That doesn't mean they're going to pick him. That means they just kind of want to know the range. Maybe how can we trade down or whatever? Like, what's going on?
I mean, this happens every year. There's always, you know, one or two guys that just start rocketing up the board, even though they really did nothing, you know, and then the rest of the league is kind of playing catch up. They're saying, well, what did we miss? You know, well, what do those guys know that we don't? And so that's what I think has happened to an extent with Patrick Williams. And, you know, it's you watch his film, it's easy to understand why. You know, he's 6'8". He's got a 7-foot wingspan. He's got an incredible body. He shows you just enough flashes of playmaking and off the dribble shooting. And then, you know, you say he's going to be this really versatile defender who can guard 2 through 4 and maybe some point guards and maybe some centers. And so you start talking yourself into this guy as you know, if we get him into the gym and lock him in and, you know, develop his shot and, you know, could he be Kawhi? And so that's where that comes from. I think it's crazy personally. I mean, I think he's a good prospect, but I don't think that he's a top 7 guy in this prospect. I don't even think he's top 10 for me, but that's definitely happening right now. And it's really interesting. It does happen. And in my experience, usually those kind of, that's a mistake, you know, like when this, it very rarely works out well for teams where just a guy keeps rising and rising and rising for no particular reason. And then he ends up being, you know, amazing.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's there up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, watch out for them. You name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
The Low Post fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite The Low Post episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like First Take and Pardon the Interruption ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/low. That's amazon.com/low to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's talk about Detroit a little bit, because you mentioned them possibly trading up, and now maybe trading down. Again, these teams are looking at everything. My thing with Detroit has always been, like, what do they have that actually makes it worth my while if I'm number one or number two to trade with them? And particularly from Golden State's perspective, it's like Luke Kennard, Sfi Mihailuk, like number 7 and an unprotected Detroit pick. Like, that's good. Like, that's a good return, but it's not like helping me win the 2021 title. I'm not getting a veteran with a I think Luke Kennard has a chance to be good, but he's been snake bit with injuries, and he just has so much skill overlap with their best players, or positional overlap anyway on defense, that doesn't excite me very much. So I'm not really sure, you know, about them, you know, what, but then you get to this point where, like, if you're number one and number two and you just don't care, or you're confident the guy you're going to be there, you like, is going to be there at 7, you should just do something for the sake of snatching up an extra asset to just to do it. Like, if you can get an extra asset for free with no cost, you should do it. And we'll talk more about that from Charlotte's perspective in a minute. But Schmitz, I wanted to ask you about a couple other guys again, like, we just seem to have no idea where they're going. Tyrese Haliburton was engineered in a lab for me to fall in love with him immediately. I love everything about him. That doesn't mean he's going to be the best player in this draft. I loved the 30 minutes I enjoyed watching him play on both ends of the floor to try to cram some knowledge about him in. Do we have any idea what his range is? Like, do we have any idea who might be interested in him?
It feels like 4 to 8, you know, I think probably on the back end of that. But I think he'd be really interesting even as high as Chicago, to be honest. If you talk about his fit with Coby White, just because he's not really a go get a bucket guy, right? He's more of a ball mover. He's highly intelligent, whereas Coby White is more of a go get a bucket guy, right? And so I think that duo would be really interesting. But, you know, you hear Detroit at 7, or I think, you know, New York would be thrilled to have him, you know, fall all the way to 8. The way I describe him is he's what we hoped Lonzo Ball would be coming out of UCLA. Like, highly unconventional, funky shot, but genius. Ooh,
it's funky. It's funky. As funky as the hype led me to believe it would be. It's funky.
But he's one of the best shooters in the draft. Like, I know, if you look at it, it's crazy. I mean, it's almost like he's teeing up a golf shot and then just like ripping it down the fairway. But yeah, that's how I describe him. He's what we hoped Lonzo would have been. You know, he doesn't have a ton of juice off the dribble. He's a little bit light. But he does pretty much everything on the court. He's an incredible off the ball defender. He's super smart. And I think the difference between him and Lonzo is that he's a highly, highly confident kid with a huge personality. Like, when I went to Vegas and saw him work out and play some 3-on-3, it's like people were so gravitated, like just how he lifted everybody's spirits around him. Like, I haven't really seen that from guys. And so, I was really, really impressed just by his mental approach to the game and how much guys gravitated toward him. And so I think he could really be that type of guy if he's not, you know, drafted to a situation where they put the ball in his hands and say, hey, go create everything, because that's where he struggles a little bit.
And few rookies are ready for that kind of burden anyway, which is why I think you guys have both written about how there's almost a stigma attached to Halliburton about how, well, he'd fit well on a good team. He'd make a good team better, as if that's like a bad thing, right? Because like, right. Is he a lead ball handler and all this? Gavone, is his range as wide as I'm making it out to be, or is it not as wide? Is it like Mike said, like that 4 to 9 or whatever?
I think that's what it is, yeah. 4 to 8, you know? I mean, he's a guy that if somebody trades up maybe to like 3 or 4, whatever, he could be the one that they're targeting, you know? So I think that's, he's going in the top 10. You know, I also agree that he'd be a good fit for the Bulls. It doesn't sound like he's got as much traction there as others, but if you have good pieces, like, he's awesome for you. The problem is that all these teams in the top 10, they stink, you know? And
well, I can think of one team in the top 3 that doesn't stink, right, and is trying to win the championship next year.
Well, they did stink, but they're hoping not to stink next year.
That seems to be, I mean, obviously that would be a reach at 2. You would try to trade down, but does he fit with Steph and Clay? Again, is there too much positional overlap?
I think he's a great fit with them. You know, I mean, if you could play Clay at the 3, you know, you can play all 3 of them together, and, you know, you don't want to overwork Steph too. I mean, it's a long season, and, you know, you don't want to play him 36, 38 minutes per game, you know, coming off an injury and all that. So, you know, you want to save him for the playoffs. So I think you need to have some real firepower there. I mean, that's one of my concerns with the Warriors is, are they going to, you know, be able to win enough games to position themselves to get into the playoffs and not fall off their feet once the playoffs start?
Well, the Warriors, I mean, it's just so tricky for them because they have clear ambitions of using this pick as a ticket to a star, and either a trade for a star, which by all accounts so far, they have not been successful. I mean, Drew Holiday is not a capital S star, so that may be where whatever veteran trade they could get, that may be. And I talked about that with Bobby last week about how that might work. I don't think the number 2 pick is getting them an all-NBA level player at this point, and you guys have heard the same, I think.
But what about Zach? What about a guy who used to be an all-NBA player? You know, we talked about Detroit. What do they have to trade? You know, he's got 2 years on his contract. Wiggins has 3. You know, is there something there that works for both sides? You know, is there, you know, everybody's talking about Blake is in this amazing shape. He's healthy now. He's ready to go. You know, if you're trying to win a championship, if your window is small, do you plug him in at the 5 and, you know, and go, you know, I mean, is that the move? I don't know. I mean, there is some talk about that out there.
For me, I don't buy it because I just don't think you can trade the number two pick now for someone who, look, I really like Blake. And I'm glad to hear, I hear all the same things you're hearing. He looks amazing. He looks like old Blake, this and that. Summer is different than game 61 and, you know, whatever in the playoffs. I just don't think you can trade the number two pick for someone who's.
Well, you get just, seven also.
You get seven. And it, again, it just depends. Like, do you, and this is the thing that the Warriors are trying to do. If we can't get a capital S star, and I think this is why you hear so much Wiseman buzz for them at number two, because at least that's the swing for the fences, or Edwards, I guess, could be the swing for the fences. I'm just thinking out loud. Like, that could be, if we're going to draft someone, we're going to try to, like, how, if we're drafting at two, we're not picking a guy like Halliburton who fits in nicely, because that doesn't do much for me when Steph, Clay, and Draymond are 35 years old. Let me take a shot at someone who might be able to take the mantle of the franchise. Failing that, you go into these trade back plus help my current team, because I do owe it to them to help them try to win the championship this year. I just think number two for Blake is even if I get seven, unless I just really love someone who's going to be there as much as anyone, I would take a number two. I just think that's, I got to get a little more. I don't see it, but I'm, you know, the Warriors intel is all over the place, so I could be wrong.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The other guy, what in the world do I make of Obi Toppin? Schmitz, like, what? Like, and he's mocked all over the place. And I started watching film of his offense, and I know the book on him already. I'm watching film of his offense, and I'm like, this dude's defense must be so freaking bad. if he's not like a no-brainer top three pick, because this guy is blowing it out of the water. Again, as a five at Dayton and all of this, but like, where? Like, well, I'll start with you, Gavoni. Actually, like, where? Like, the range for him seems especially wild.
I mean, I think eight is definitely the lowest he goes. I don't
That's
see him.
That's the getting... lowest he goes?
Yes, definitely. You know, wow. The guy who recruited him all year, who signed him to, you know, is running the team who has the number eight pick. You know, they're, and I think from what all understanding, he's dying to get Obi Toppin. There's nobody that he trusts more in this draft. We're talking about Leon Rose and the Knicks than Obi Toppin. So I can't see any scenario that Toppin goes below eight. And I think, honestly, I think he's going four or five, you know, like I really don't think he's going very far, just because he was the best player in college basketball. They were a number one seed. He fits the modern NBA offensively really, really well. He's very high character. He's ready to go. You know, like, if you're a bad team, you plug in Obi Toppin right away, and he's going to probably be rookie of the year, you know? So what, you know, in a draft where you're picking a guy November 18, and then you're playing your first game December 22, there's a real comfort level having a guy who is 22 years old and is already, you know, is obviously one of the most productive players in the draft. He's probably the most ready guy to contribute right now.
Schmitz, obviously, the question is all about his defense. Mm-hmm. He played the five at Dayton. The assumption is a defense with him playing the five in the NBA is a disaster. So can he guard the four? Well, then the question is, he doesn't exactly look light on his feet, and the fours are getting smaller and faster and shootier in the NBA every year. So I will just put it to you. You seem the most optimistic about Toppin among you, Jonathan and Kevin Pelton, last week in your roundup of big men. Like, does he have a position on defense, or is he so good on offense that he's going to be Amari Stoudemire with three-point range, and you just put him at the five and say, maybe we get enough good defenders around the wing and we're just a destructive offensive team and we live with it?
Yeah, the defense, I think, is going to be a challenge, especially, like you said, with the fours are now wings, right? And so him chasing those guys around, I think, is going to be a challenge. But, you know, watching some film with him, this kid has been coached. Like, Anthony Grant is an NBA level coach, and we're going through pick and roll coverages, and he's like, listen, in the sideline alley, we're going to be icing, and then now here I'm weaking, and I got a corral, and he, like, he sees the game at a really, really high level, and I think that's going to help him at least become close to passable. Like, he told me, he's like, listen, I've been studying Al Horford film, you know, back to the Florida days, and how he plays the cat and mouse game and bluff and recover. And so he understands those things, which I think is really, really going to help him. And I think he's going to be so good on offense that you live with some of that stuff. And that's kind of the comparison I've made. And I know they're on a different trajectory, him and Amari, and Amari more powerful and this and that. But like, if Amari came up in today's game where you're, you know, bombing threes and in trail situations, picking and popping and doing that, like, I do see some similarities with those guys. And now this kid is a much better passer. And I think that's where his game is going to continue to grow. But, you know, the question is drafting 22-year-olds in the top 10. I mean, if you look at like the last 10 years, aside from Dame, it's Chris Dunn, it's Buddy Hield, it's Frank Kaminsky, it's Jimmer Fredette, it's Wesley Johnson, Ekpe Udoh.
I'm feeling pain like in my stomach. Just this is really hurting me. I've felt enough nausea in the last 6 days. I don't need any more nausea. Stop inducing it in me.
The list is not great. But here's what I'll say about Obi Toppin. He's on a completely different trajectory than any of those guys, than any 22-year-old pick. Like, he had no offers out of high school. And then he goes to prep school, and then he shoots up 3 inches. He grew an inch during his first year at Dayton when he was an academic redshirt. So I do think there's still some untapped potential there. And he would be my pick for rookie of the year.
He's 6'9", correct?
Yeah, 6'9". Yep. 6'9", I think around a 7.
That I think that's part of the fear is, like, you can have a guy who's a, like, I look at a guy like Jokic, who I've always argued is not as bad defensively as his critics, and certainly there are matchups where he looks just you don't even want to watch it. It's so bad. But when he gets in shape, and he's also huge, right? So you can live in certain contexts with a slow-footed, lead-footed, can't jump over a phone book center when that dude is a legit 7 foot. Rebounds everything in sight, has good hands. Like, Jokic is always at the top of the leaderboard in steals for centers and deflections overall, and at least can get big around the rim. And I know that you highlighted Obi Toppin's verticality around the rim at Dayton, but like, Dayton's not playing an NBA schedule, and this dude is 6'9". So like, you're just limited. There's just a limit to the number of solutions you have defensively. But Amari, if you want to make that comparison, and that's definitely who he reminded me of at first glance, like, some of it was Steve Nash. But you could not do anything with prime Amari Stoudemire. That guy was dunking on your face multiple times a game. He had a smooth face-up jumper, a smooth face. Like, that first step from the left wing, the left triple threat position, you're done. It's over. Nobody could stay in front of that, let alone a center. Like, you had no chance. You put that guy with three-point range, and it's just like, it's going to be a problem. So I'm very curious to see which team pulls the trigger on him. And if he can indeed get better on defense to the point that he's average, because to your point, he is a good passer. And passing to me at least indicates, like, I have good pattern recognition. Mm-hmm. And even if that doesn't translate to a good stance on defense or fast feet on defense, it should translate to anticipation on defense. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think he has really good defensive instincts. It's more like it's funny because he's such a leaper. He's so explosive, like, north south, incredible rim runner, like, vertically, great lob catcher. But he has this really, really narrow base, kind of hunched up top, and just is a little bit of a strange mover. So I think more than understanding the game, that's what kind of limits him. But I really do think that, you know, he's going to buy himself some time just with his defensive IQ and the fact that he's a great dude. Like Jonathan said, he's one of the, you know, more high character guys in this draft, and teams feel really, really comfortable, you know, bringing him into their program.
I do have to say, I said before the podcast, Mike, you have a way about you in these film sessions with players to write to their face. And I do this in interviews too. It's a skill you have to learn. Tell them what they're bad at in a way that's polite enough for them to say, I am bad at that, actually, and here are all the ways I'm bad at it, and let me tell you how I'm trying to remedy being bad at it. It's remarkable. Gavon, you look like you want to say something about this.
Well, I'm just wondering, how many guys who are 218 pounds when they're 22 years old really play the center position in the NBA. That, you know, not so much the height to me, like he just doesn't have a lot of bulk. And so I really do see him ending up as a four. I mean, we have this huge measurements database that goes back 30 years, and we have, you know, almost every player that, you know, has been in the NBA during that time. All of his physical comps are small forwards. It's TJ Warren, it's Chris Middleton, you know, it's guys like it's Tobias Harris, you know, Amari. I just looked back when he was coming in, he was coming out of high school. He was 232 pounds, you know, and this was when he was 19 years old. Obi is 218, maybe 220. And he's stayed that way. I mean, a year ago he measured 218. So he's not getting a lot bulkier from what I can tell. And so that's where he's going to struggle to me playing the five. And that's why I think he's definitely going to end up being a four. But like you said, he's so upright on the perimeter. He almost plays on stilts. And so
he's stiff. And some guys are just stiff. Like, it's not something that you can really change that much.
Right. And so I, you know, to me, I see him more of like a John Collins than Amari, you know, I mean, still a really good player, somebody you definitely want to have on your team. But I mean, that's where the hesitation, I think, comes from teams in the top three right now.
Let's end by going back to the top of the draft. And I wanted to circle back to this. Your report that Oklahoma City may be trying to trade up to the number one pick to get LaMelo Ball. I personally have not heard that, but you're more plugged into this stuff than I am. And Sam Presti, you're not going to hear a lot about what's coming out of that front office. A lot of what's true anyway. But they have the 25th pick in the draft. They have a bunch of, they own a gazillion extra first round picks from both Houston and the Clippers. And the Houston picks are far enough out where, like, you're looking at those picks like, ooh, that those could be, if things go south with the Harden Westbrook thing, like, those could be good picks. And you want to say, like, the Clippers picks will be low in perpetuity, but, like, we don't know that. You know, those guys, Kawhi and PG, are free agents after this season. They're also not 25, they're 30. Some of those picks are valuable. I just don't know that you can throw a bunch of picks at me of uncertain value, right? Like, the Houston picks could go the other way. Maybe some crazy stuff happens and the Houston picks end up being number 20 every year. I don't know. I'm a little skeptical they could just throw a whole ton of picks at the Wolves and get the number one pick. Maybe they can. What, can you elaborate a little bit on what you're hearing?
Yeah, just that they're one of the teams that's called and they're kicking the tires and, you know, probably like everybody's doing, they want to see what would it take. You know, I'm hearing that there's a real affinity there for LaMelo Ball. And the question is, what does it take? You know, I mean, because like you said, they have all the assets to do anything they want in this draft. I mean, and they have players too that people want. I mean, even like a Lou Dort, a Steven Adams, you know, Shea is untouchable.
I'm so excited that Lou Dort just got mentioned. Say what you said. Did you just say Shea was untouchable?
Yeah, I would assume that he's untouchable. You know, like, he's probably worth more than the number one pick. But
is he?
I mean, the playoffs were pretty disappointing to me. I mean, he had one or two good games, but he disappeared for a lot of those moments. But I would just think that, you know, being 22 years old, you know, with the trajectory that he's on, I'm not as big of a Shea guy as Schmitz is, for example, but I have a hard time seeing them, you know, not ride that one out to see what he turns into. Because, you know, I mean, that Paul George trade, you know, like, it's really looking like they won that pretty, you know, pretty handedly.
Let's just say you think LaMelo Ball's the guy. Okay. Sam Presti thinks LaMelo Ball's the guy. I have no idea if that's true. Let's just say that. I assume the same as you, Jonathan. I was talking this through with a bunch of people around the league last night. I said, I assume Shea's untouchable. You know, he's just finished his second year. He's young. He's long. He averaged almost 20 points a game last year. And a few of them said, well, why would you assume he's untouchable for the number one pick? Why? Like, wouldn't that be the out of nowhere, oh my God, but when you start to think about it, it makes a little bit more sense move. Like, he's a year away from being eligible for a contract extension. And if he has another good year, he's going to demand a max. If you just think he's a good number two guy or a good number three guy, let's say, and you think LaMelo Ball's the guy, and you can just, you know, flip Shea in one pick for that, like, I have no idea if any of this stuff is really happening, but it was one, you have these moments when you cover the NBA where something strikes you as on its face absurd. Like, of course, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I love Shai. I'm probably closer to Schmitz on Shai. Of course, he's untouchable. He's a young cornerstone of a rebuilding team. Like, why would they ever trade him? And then you start to think about it and you're like, there are some scenarios where it's not insane. Like, I don't, let's put it, I'm with you, Jonathan. I don't think that's a thing that's happening, okay? I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to be discussed. If it is being discussed, I don't know that it's going to be discussed. Let me just be very crystal clear about that. But you can find smart people in the NBA who are like, just step back for a second, Zach. Step back and think. It's not as absurd as you think it is.
Yeah, it's a tough call to know, you know, that's what makes this so hard is that we're talking about, you know, draft prospects, who's going to pick who. We don't really know what, you know, we have 150 games of evidence on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in the NBA, and we still don't really know what kind of player he's going to end up being. So what are we going to say about James Wiseman, who played 3 games in college, or LaMelo Ball, who played 12 games, or Anthony Edwards, who played, you know, 25 meaningless games in college? So that's what makes this so tough. And honestly, I don't have the answer for it.
Schmitz, you remain high on Shai?
Very high. Love Shai. Team Shai.
Like over under 3.5 all-star appearances, you're taking the over?
I'll take the over.
Interesting.
I'll take the over. You? What do you got?
That's a good line. I don't know what I would take. I might take the under. I might take like 2 or 3. I might take him as like, particularly if he stays in the West and the West stays this good. It's like a guy who makes a few all-star appearances but isn't like your perennial all-star type. But I'm not sure. Like, I'm really not. Playing with Chris Paul last year, he had a great year, but it also, to Jonathan's point, made you sort of confused about, like, okay, exactly what is this guy at age 28? And, like, he could be a lot. Maybe he becomes James Harden. I don't know. Like, maybe he becomes a total number one apex predator kind of player. And maybe playing with Chris was so healthy for him because he didn't have to be that kind of player. And he, I don't know, but I've always been super high on Shai since I started to watch him play in the league. And I thought it was just a home run for Oklahoma. So, forget all the picks. I kept saying, like, they got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in this trade. Like, that's crazy that in addition to all that, they got him. And let's finish up with Wiseman and Charlotte in particular, because there's been this assumption for months now that as soon as Charlotte hit number 3 in the lottery, and so, boy, okay, Edwards, Wiseman, Ball, okay, they could, you know, they need a big man. You know, how much would they trade up to assure themselves of getting the guy who is generally ranked the number one big man in the draft? And, you know, I know that, you know, Minnesota for sure is going to project, if you want this, and again, Minnesota has to decide, if we trade back to 3, what are we getting there? Mm-hmm. Who are we getting there? Are we getting someone really loving? What happens if we're not? But you want the number one pick because all the buzz has been, and Jonathan, you repeated this today, Warriors are taking Wiseman at number 2. I have no idea if that's true. That's what the buzz has been. You want to come to number 1, you got to give us the mother load. You got to give us like Miles Bridges, the 3rd pick, an unprotected first round pick the very following year, something like that. And again, all you can really make is educated guesses because this is misinformation season. I'm sure the Hornets really like Wiseman. I do think they love the idea of ending up with him somehow. I'm not sure they're paying that kind of price to move up to get him, in part because that kid from USC, Okongwu, is a really intriguing prospect that I believe both of you have ahead of Wiseman on your big man rankings. Is that correct?
Yep.
So, Schmitz, I'll start with you. Sell me on this guy. Forget the value proposition of like how much would Charlotte actually have to give up to move up to number 1 and 100% lock in James Wiseman. Sell me on the idea that there's effectively no difference between these two guys. If you get a Okongwu at number 3, you should be totally psyched.
Because he's exactly what you want defensively in today's game, right? We're seeing so many 7-1 guys who aren't really there yet guarding pick and roll getting played off of the floor. And I think that's what teams love about Onyeka, is that if you want to go small and you want to play Bam, or you want to go play even super small, then Okongwu is okay with that because he can switch ball screens. He's really, really good in these drop situations. Like, he has a super, super high basketball IQ. And then if you want to play big, okay, fine. Like, he can protect the rim. He's a little bit undersized against an Embiid or a Jokic. I think he's going to struggle against those type of guys, but he's about as close as you'll find, to a guy who can play against those jumbo lineups and then can also play against those small lineups. And he has 30 games of experience under his belt. You know, he played a full season at USC. He played oftentimes with two bigs on the floor also and a freshman point guard, and he still put up those numbers. So he needs almost no offensive volume to have an impact. And so I think that's why you'll hear a lot of chatter about really good teams trying to get into the top 10 to draft him, because they know, oh, that's what we're missing. Like, for us to take the next step, that's what we're missing.
That's the other thing, and I mentioned this in my column last week. I'm so glad you reminded me. In addition to the Pat Williams thing, and perhaps connected to the Pat Williams thing, I've had a number of teams in the top 9, 10, 8 of the draft say, there are these good teams, like really good playoff teams, who have been kind of like aggressively calling us, trying to see how to get our pick and what it would cost to get our pick. And the reaction of these teams has been, we don't know whether it's because they love a prospect, like they're trying to get in on this Pat Williams mania that apparently is sweeping the nation, or B, they're just trying to get something else to include in a big trade, either at the draft or down the line. But it sounds like you guys have heard the same stuff, that these calls are happening. Mike, you just alluded to it.
Yeah, I've heard about a few different teams trying to get into the top 10. And he's I don't know specific prospect like you said, but he's the name that comes to mind for me, just because he's exactly what you need, you know, defensively in today's game. And a lot of those playoff teams, they already have guys who can go get you 20 or who can, you know, run the show offensively and do all those things. And he's kind of the missing piece that everybody's looking for. And when you hear the BAM comps, I think it's more a matter of the defensive side of the ball. It's the versatility that he brings there. Offensively, he's not a point center yet. He's not going to do all those things that BAM does. I don't think he ever is going to be that. But a lot of people who saw BAM at a young age would tell you they didn't see that coming with him either. So that's why I like Okongwu. He's just very, very safe in that he's extremely intelligent. He blocks everything at the rim. He finishes everything. He's a low maintenance dude. Whereas with James, love his upside, love what he could become. It's going to take him a little bit of time. He's played only 3 collegiate games. It takes bigs years in the league to figure out how to defend pick and roll. You know, thinking quickly on the offensive end of the floor, moving it side to side, doing all those things, I think it's just going to take a little bit of an adjustment. But you know, if he's ever able to really master blocking shots, catching lobs, and then eventually as a guy who can like space the floor as a shooter, then okay, like, yeah, he's going to be a stud. But I think for him, it's very, very situational. Whereas Okongwu, plug him in anywhere and he's going to be an impactful player.
What do you say, Jonathan?
I think if you're Boston, for example, that's the guy that you're targeting. You're trying to package 14, 26, and 30, and you're trying to move up. You need to move up ahead of Washington, who are at 9. That's where we have him now in our new mock, is at 9, which to me is surprising because, honestly, I would put him at 2 on my board. You know?
Yeah, based on what I have been hearing from people, I was surprised to see so many people have him going to the Wizards at 9. I'm like, wait a second, people are talking about this dude like he's a top 5 pick, no doubt.
Right, it should be LaMelo, Okongwu, Isaac Okoro. That should be the top 3, but it's not going to go that way on draft night. And so the question is, where do you need to get to if you're Boston? And I don't think those picks get it done. It doesn't sound like 14, 26, and 30 gets you to 7 or 8. You know, so which young player do they have to put on the table? And then that becomes complicated for them, I think.
It's going to be whenever the gates are open, it's going to be wild, and you guys have a lot of work left to do. So please read the column on the Draft Buzz today. The mock draft is coming out. What did you guys say, Wednesday?
Wednesday night, because we have that mock draft show. I think Schmitz is on. Schmitz on ESPN2.
Oh, gosh, I should know that. Yeah, we'll say. I think it's ESPN.
Okay, it's on television.
There you go.
It's on television. Yeah, one of our network, one of our employers.
Where are you going to film this?
Yeah, I'm flying to Bristol tomorrow.
Godspeed. Mike Schmitz and Jonathan Givony, the legwork you do, the traveling you do, the analysis you do is just absolutely gargantuan and second to none. It's super fun to talk to you, and maybe we can reconvene after the draft, or maybe the day before the draft, or, you know, I'm sure you have nothing else to do the day before the draft other than come on my podcast. But it's always a pleasure to see you guys. Please stay safe, and we will reconvene soon.
Thanks, Zach.
Awesome. Thanks, Zach.